Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Outside the Panels. I am Chaz Simons, and with me, as always, my good friend,
Poet Air. And today we are missing Jack, our maestro and faithful editor, because unfortunately real life happened and his internet guy is at his house fixing his internet in the mountains.
I'm not going to lie, I'm blaming the dwarves. I think they got too deep underground and they accidentally nipped his cable. But
nor San Juan,
we'll see.
I agree with you. Where he lived and where I used to live is so similar to a town like White Ash. Like, it's a former mining town, and there's definitely secret dwarves and elves there.
some underground business. So that's the book we're talking about today, though, is White Ash.
Yes, we are talking about White Ash, our second scout entry, which is written by an awesome guy who talks to us quite a lot, named Charlie Stickney. He even gave us a little thing special to talk about at the end of our coverage of the main book.
This is a pretty cool one, though. Charlie's a pretty cool guy as well. He's the full-blown president of Scout, right?
He is co-publisher. He's the full publisher. The president is James Hack.
That's right. I always get those president and publisher mixed
up. But he wasn't publisher before White Ash, and then White Ash, I don't know what happened, but he was like somehow got him to become the publisher, but he was like a YA fantasy writer for books before he came into comics, and White Ash actually started on Kickstarter too.
So you're talking full blown text adventures, books without pictures, scary stuff.
Yeah, I love the prose too, but it's scary stuff. But
no, I agree. I'm all comics over here. I need those images. I mean,
it's easier for me to read through comics quicker. I'm trying to read that Bloodlight Garnets right now, and it's pretty good, but I'm reading it slowly. But anyhow, White Ash is written by Charlie Stickney. It is drawn and lettered by Connor Hughes, and it is colored by Finn Krem. And it is a story about a small mining town in Pennsylvania called White Ash. Our main character, Alex Werg, is about to leave to college. And then his father, who's a miner, there is a mining accident, which kind of just reveals all the secrets of this town in Pennsylvania. And it's all kind of set off by this man named Seth. Let's get some of your initial thoughts about it, Chaz, and then we'll get into the nitty gritty, the book, and why we love it.
So it's described in the solicitation text for it as Romeo and Juliet meets Lord of the Rings in rural Pennsylvania, and I could not agree that there's no better apt description for it than that. It's got all of these terrific fantasy elements, a really good romantic element. It's got the mystery of what's happening in the mine, how long this has been going on in the town. Plus, there's some interesting things to be said about class in this book as well. Like, White Ash is broken up between the people that live up high above where the ash from the mine comes and the people who live in that gray, dour part of town that's covered in ash. So this book was tackling a lot, but doing it very deftly, very, very, very well executed, I would say.
I was going to bring it up, too, because we learn quickly that the classes in White Ash are dwarves and elves. The dwarves are the miners that live in the ash-covered part of town, and the elves are the rich elite who live above it. Alec is a half-man, half-dwarf, whose father, Gunther, is the one caught in the...
Full dwarf.
What was that?
I said he's full dwarf, Gunther is.
Gunther is full dwarf, yeah.
Beard and everything.
And this explosion kind of gets Cobb, who is Gunther's best friend, to reveal Alec's truth as being a half-man, half-dwarf. And Alec has been saving money working for Thane, whose daughter Lillian is the love interest in the book. And Thane is...
I was going to say, is sort of the the bad guy from every 80s movie. He's the one. I'm in charge of this town. I'm control the mind.
I was going to get into
but
it.
But also is a tight-ass warrior. But, so.
you're completely correct that he is a bad guy in every 80s movie. I wasn't going to bring it up yet, but this book mixes a lot of genres, and it reminds me so much of an 80s movie, of almost like a Robert Zemeckis 80s movie, because there's like elements of horror, but not too horrific, because Seth, who's part of the Brood, who are the villains of this first arc, basically eat humans. Like, he'll just collect and eat humans in kind of horrific ways. But then there's also a lot of comedy, and of course the fantasy elements, and it really reminded me of like something Zemeckis would have done in the 80s. And Thane is definitely that 80s villain that runs the town that you see in so many of those old school 80s movies. I couldn't agree with you more.
This is my town kind of guy. Yeah. Which is interesting, because when we find out sort of how this town has been operating for a long time, it almost seems as though they've positioned themselves, the elves, that sect, that class, in a way that really takes advantage of the dwarves. It's pretty wild that they have so much power despite so little responsibility, I guess, to the town itself.
And both the dwarves and elves age slower than humans, which Alec, for his whole life, he thought he was 19, but he's actually like in his late 40s, which he didn't know until a video that Cobb gives him from his dad to reveal that he's a dwarf, which is kind of funny that he didn't realize he was like 40
in diapers until 47. He was 13 or 20, yeah, or whatever they said. Yeah, he was
47 instead of 19. And yeah, that good part of didn't you remember you're in diapers for quite a long time. And basically, this class system between the elves and the dwarves is the Romeo and Juliet element, because slowly throughout the book, because they have to work together to hunt the brood, Alec and Lillian begin to have a relationship, and that's kind of forbidden for dwarves and elves to have any kind of relationship. And slowly through the book, they kind of fall in love, even though Alec also has another girl crushing on him, which reminds me also of the 80s movies at this mechanic shop that he helps out at. Her name's Catelyn, and his friend Kyle, they have like this little mechanic shop in the town of White Ash, which reminded me also of those 80s movies of the, you know, different, the little kind of love triangles and all these.
Yeah, the click.
Yeah, and that the definite click and all these little characters kind of thrown throughout the town. It's such a well-developed world that Charlie creates in it. And it makes me real interested for the future of the series, because I want to see a lot more, because it's basically Norse mythology where all they're coming from. Like, the dwarves are from Nidvallar, and the elves are from Alfheim, and they banded together to fight a giant serpent named Nidhoggr. And while doing so, they basically got caught in Pennsylvania when a cave-in happened in the mines while they were basically destroying Nidhoggr, which then created the brood, because her blood spread to all these women who then had children, who created the brood, who are these reptilian creatures that feed on humans, and they have different generations and classes. And Seth is the one that has come to town and kind of causing all this trouble.
Boy, does he. He is, like, right from the get, so charming and, like, whatever. Like, as I'm reading him, I'm like, oh, this will be an interesting new character. And then when he leaves somebody, like, dismembered in the toilet in a rest stop, I was like, oh, no. This is our bad guy here. This guy is coming to town for nefarious reasons. He's not the outside mentor of like, hey, let me tell you, I got some real important secrets. Because usually in those 80s movies that we're talking about, or even in some of the fantasy movies, there's some sort of outsider who comes in with this new information that pushes our hero Alec onto this new train of life. Because as he's getting ready to go to college and leave town forever, in his mind, Alec is, He's drawn back in, Tremor style. He just can't escape. There's the explosion at the mine. He's got to care for his dad. Then he's finally, it's fine. He's in the hospital, and he's going to be okay. He's a hearty guy. I'm getting out of this town. I'm finally going to my college. But he can't because there's something bigger at play. So it's an interesting look at trying to escape your small town, huh? Sometimes it feels impossible, and sometimes a lizard man comes to town who likes to eat people, and you got to beat him up with your best friend.
Yeah, and then even falling in love, you know, with the town itself again, too, I think is a big portion of the book because, you know, by the end of the book, he definitely is more interested in now protecting White Ash and his people, whereas before he kind of despised everything about the town and didn't really understand it well.
And in a way, when we first see the town and we first view it through his eyes, I would also feel that way of like, I got to get out of here the minute I can. Otherwise, I'm going to be like covered in this ash and weighed down for the rest of my life. If I don't not become a miner today, I will be a miner the rest of my life. And then we find out how long their lifespan is and like, whew, thank goodness he almost got out. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know.
Things look better by the end of the book, but
how he wasn't suspicious with like that bar that's fully Viking themed and, you know, as
I mean, we got like Raiders bars here. That's, well, Raiders, the football team, because they're our team now in Las Vegas, I guess.
And there is,
because that's
there's
cool.
Star Wars
but
bars
there's,
in the Bay Area.
There's weird. Yeah, I was going to say, there's weird themed bars. So I could see where they might say like, oh, yeah, we just really love the culture of like rah, 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 or if they needed to explain it. But it's like how Applebee's used to just have a bunch of junk on the wall. Yeah, well, I didn't ask questions. I just stared at the weird football trophies.
The mysteries, too, that are left open, I'm really excited about. I really want to see more of Alfheim and Nidvalar, which I think we will, and we'll talk about how we, luckily, from Charlie, got a sneak peek of one of more of Alfheim and kind of how these fantasy characters were before they got stuck in this dingy town of White Ash, Pennsylvania.
I got to say, I had a lot of sympathy for almost all the characters, except for Thane, and I was really nervous that Alec's uncle, that Gunther's brother, who shows back up to town and has been, like, hunting brood outside of town and doing some stuff, I was really worried that that was going to come and, like, betray him, basically. I was really worried that there was going to be that betrayal moment element to it of this guy who had been tempted by all
he
this.
Did.
Yeah, that's true.
That's another lingering mystery is why did Orm kill his brother?
He could have misidentified. It could have just been a mistake. They're hundreds and hundreds of years old. You lose a step or two for every you gain.
I don't know. That's one of the lingering mysteries. Also, there's something special about Alec besides being half human and half dwarf, which is constantly hinted at throughout the series, which we don't really learn too much about. But with Thane and Orm and Cobb, they always keep on saying, does he know what he is? Which hints that something is special about him. Maybe his mother wasn't really human, as we're told. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
There's a lot of heavy implications, especially in the late game of the book, where he's using some cool, familiar weaponry that would lead me to believe that maybe there's a godly element, right? And usually in this, or sorry, demigodly element. And usually that's sort of how mythology takes its course. It's that human side, but is endowed with godhood. And usually that's the way they explain it, is like, oh, yeah, my dad was a god and my mom was a regular lady. But I'm kind of curious if maybe she was one of the brood, perhaps, or something. The brood.
Oh, that he's half brood, half dwarf?
Yeah, instead of half human.
That could be it, too. That's
because I feel like that's a better turn than the, like, godly element, unless because there's the different realms already established with the Alfheim and the Dwarf Realm, which I'm going to butcher because it's so many consonants, so I'm just going to say the Dwarf Realm. You could think that maybe she came from Asgard, or maybe from, like, Jotunheim, or he could be another Norse element mixed in there.
Or maybe Gunthar was Tyr, but Tyr was not a dwarf. He was a being from Asgard.
Yeah.
Because there is that scene when he's fighting Seth in the mine where he yells, you know, by the might of Tyr.
Yeah.
I'm probably mispronouncing that as well.
Which I took that as more of like that rallying cry for strength. You know what I mean? Like, God, give me power or whatever. Like, you know, something along those lines, which would sort of play into the idea that those other realms are out there and they exist. But I think it would be a more interesting turn if there was another sort of that Romeo and Juliet situation of good and evil finding that common ground in love. Right? But being mortal enemies, I could see where maybe it wouldn't have worked out.
Yeah, that would be maybe more interesting. I would think, you know, either maybe his mother was the god or, like you said, a brood, which would be very interesting if she was a part of the brood.
Yeah.
The comedy elements in this are great, too, like those 80 comedies elements, especially the budding relationship between Alec and Lillian.
The love-hate of a rich kid, poor kid. I'm so tempted to come to the other side of the tracks. You've got it easy.
and then that part where I love that all dwarves have burrows where they find all the weapons and it's hidden behind a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey. And then they find dwarf mead, which gets Lillian extremely drunk and then goes full on flirtatious, which introduces us to Thane's stabbing weapon, which heals immediately. He basically stabs Alec and then later near the end of the book uses it as a torture mechanism, but it's basically a blade that after it stabs you, it heals you immediately, which is another cool element that was added into it.
I liked for the comedy element. I really liked the reveal of the ages because Lily is supposed to be like 19 or 20, but she's really like 190 or 200. And Thane still gets really mad about, like, you're not supposed to be drinking.
I think she's, like, 201 years old or maybe 205 years old. Because we'll get into the one shot that we got early access to in a little bit. But and it's 1812 in that when she decides that she wants to have a child with Thane, Glarion.
Yeah.
Who's Lillian's badass elf queen mother, who, man, we only get a hint of how badass she is in the original White Ash first season. But in that one shot, we really get to see her, you know, full warrior goddess. So much of the book I like, too, is just how it blends the fantasy with the comedy and all these genres, like I said before.
And action, it carries the action really well. The fights in this are pretty awesome, pretty epic. We get to see some elf bow skills, which was cool. Alec gets a really, like I was describing earlier, a very familiar weapon, if not a very boring weapon, that he uses to cause great pain on Seth. And Seth's powers are equally terrifying. He's very hypnotic. I described him as charming at the beginning, and I think that plays into it. He can make people do what he wants, much to Alec's friend, his lady friend's dismay as she is forced to cut off her fingers and feed them to him.
Yeah, exactly. But eventually she breaks his gaze too, but she's supposed to just be human. And then Lillian even has trouble fighting off his gaze. But he really does, with that boring rock weapon, wreck Seth's world and kind of really show off his power. And kind of has just a natural talent to his dwarven abilities immediately once he's actually out there in action.
Yeah, once he believes in himself. And I think she's able to break his gaze not just because of the power of love and friendship or whatever, but to also show it shows Lily having trouble breaking his gaze, but her being able to do it even as a regular human shows that there is some strength to being just a human as well. Because we were watching all these people find out that they're more, they pull their hair back and they got the pointy elf ears, and all of a sudden it becomes like this big mythical thing. But we also get to see that humanity has its own strength as well, regardless of whether they're half dwarf or half elf, which I thought was kind of cool.
Which is, yeah, I agree with you there, that it shows we as humans also have strength. And it's just, it's this story of people lost from their town. Lost from their realms. I love the illustrations Connor does when he tells the story of them fighting Nidhogger and kind of goes all old school with the fantasy telling of it. And the way it switches from that fantasy telling to then Gunther's hilarious video of telling Alec that he's a dwarf, like the back and forth of learning about his backstory and also just the backstory of his people. And I like the many dimensions that each character has, because Thane is, you know, obviously like the 80s bad guy that runs the town, but then he'll do something really nice, but then he'll go back and do something really bad again. Which, another question I have is, what is that egg? Because Thane basically has a change of heart and kind of helps our heroes near the midpoint of the story. But then at the end, you find out he hired Seth in the first place. And Seth was supposed to kill Gunther and Alec and failed. But because of that failure, Thane ends up helping Alec. And then we are left with this egg. I'm assuming dragon egg. Do you think that's what that is?
I was thinking dragon egg, or maybe even some sort of serpent egg. Like, perhaps there is a way to bring back the big giant serpent that they were chasing.
Nidhogger. Nidhogger, yeah.
That spawned the brood, and they're hoping to use that as the pathway back to Alfheim. At any cost, like dwarven costs included, despite the long history they've had in White Ash, if it serves their end goal, they're going to do it. That was what I was thinking. A dragon would be dope as hell, though.
Dragon would be awesome. I'm thinking, you know, it's probably going to be something involved with Nidhogger, but a dragon would be great. We'll see in season two. That's kind of a whole recap of it. It is of the first season of White Ash. It is Romeo and Juliet meets Lord of the Rings. Also just meets the class system of America and the middle class and hardworking Americans and the rich that kind of, the 1% that kind of run their worlds and lives. It is hilarious to me that Alec was going to pay for his college by just pruning the garden at Thane's house, how much he was getting paid to do that, which was, man, if I knew I could have gone to college pruning some rich dude's gardens, I definitely would have been doing that.
Yeah, when I was no in kidding. High school. Me too. Sign me up.
How did he, one question about him actually being 47, does that mean he just didn't, I'm guessing that means he just didn't look like high school age till he was in his like late 30s.
Maybe. Or maybe they told him that he was like Jack from that Robin Williams movie. He just had like progeria or something real crazy. And then like when he stopped growing, kind of when he like evened out at his high school height, they were like, wow, you beat it. We've never seen this before. You're going to grow like normal.
We're going to talk about Jack now for a second. That movie's directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, ain't it? Like...
What? I think that movie might be offensive, too, because if you see people with actual progeria, they do not look like Robin Williams in that. And to go from The Godfather to that movie, I mean, Francis Ford Coppola has made some weird movies. Recently, he's made a lot of abstract and kind of art-based films.
Yeah.
But I think that was one of his, like, before Tetro. Was Jack his last movie before Tetro? Which is that weird one with Vincent Gallo. And we guys all saw our polls this week. We were heavily, or I was heavily debating on putting Brown Bunny on the polls, which I think we may have got flack for if we put that on. But The polls we'll talk about in a bit too, because we get to announce the winners in that. But yeah, White Ash is a lot of fun. It's a fun comedy, fantasy, action story. It's completely unique how Charlie builds all these characters. And with this deal they've got now with the media companies and them having shows being launched on Disney Plus, White Ash would make a perfect Disney Plus show, because I think it would be great for like an hour long or 45 minute show. I mean, better on Disney Plus than CW, but it would definitely fit well in that format with all the characters in the story. I think it would really launch into a whole new medium if they turned it into a television show like that.
I could see it working on either program as well. I agree that Disney Plus would give them the budget to do the cool transformations and elf scenes and dwarven stuff, but CW doesn't have Supernatural anymore, so some of that different universe money is all free now.
I know, Mosaic, the entertainment company that Scott is now working with, their first one they got, deal they got was through Disney Plus, which means I think Disney might be interested in it.
Yeah.
Maybe Disney will buy Scout too. I hope not. I love Scout for what they're doing right now. They're just doing so many exciting things. They had so many great books come out this week. One of them, two of them, I'm like over the wall about, Frank at Home on the Farm and Children of the Grave, where I'm just crazy about those two books.
Yeah, Frank at Home was a pretty frightening sort of existential terror with some real life psychological terror. And then I still got to read Children of the Grave, but I also read The Recount from Scout this week, which is
fantastic.
I was going to say, yeah, terrifying in a different way, almost like what?
The Recount so good because I don't know who to root for.
Yeah. That's what I was just thinking. Like, after I read it, I was like, well, I don't want to say go guys go, but I also can't stand by while this other stuff happens. Like, what do you do? I guess you just got to choose a side.
There's this evil, so much in history is evil people in power. And this is the recount is basically the gathering of the masses, which the group is called the masses, to basically take back America. And they're just starts off with them murdering the president and then them going after the vice president.
And anybody that helped. And it's wild. Yeah.
It's wild. And I mean, I guess your protagonist would kind of be the vice president and the Secret Service agent to guard her. But I kind of am rooting for the masses too, because we all know, I don't want to get too political, but there's corruption in the government. And to see a book like that really kind of take it to that level, it's great. And it was released at a great time. They really should have got it released the Wednesday after the election, but still close enough. Another one of these great new Scout launches. And Frank at Home on the Farm, which I read more than Chaz, because it was originally a Kickstarter by the awesome Jordan Thomas, who has a new book coming out called Mugshots that I backed, which I'm really excited about. He's a British writer. Frank at Home on the Farm, though, is about that. We'll talk about it a little bit because it's a Scout issue. It's a guy who comes home from World War One and his whole family's missing. No one seems to really remember his family or his family's farm except for one old man who kind of has dementia. And there's just a lot of psychological stuff going on with Frank from his trauma from the war. And it's also filled with a lot of terrifying talking farm animals that are at home with Frank. And it gets just crazier and crazier. The best way I can describe it is The Shining on a farm that just spirals into more and more insanity. It's a fantastic book.
The vibe that I got from that one was The Shining meets 1984. The Shining meets Animal Farm. Like, is this what's going on? Are these animals better than humans? Are they the ones causing all this?
I agree with you a lot on that. And then also with that, in Children of the Grey, there's so much in the background details and art, which is fantastic in the storytelling from Scout, which gives hints to what's happening. Because even with Frank, if you reread it a few times, you could catch the little details hinting about more of what's going on with Frank. And with Children of the Grave, what's going on with this community, which I won't talk about it too much because you haven't read it yet, Chaz. But small synopsis is there's this town called Terra. All these children are brought there as infants and raised there. Everything's provided for them. And a religious sect controls it. And there's this one character named... And there's an outer rim, which no one's allowed to go to outside of Terra. And there's a character named Daniel who kind of questions his reality and decides to make that venture outside of the rim, which leads to some shocking scenes. And there's proof that regular humanity, like us, was there at one time, but also lots of news clippings and articles on the ground that when you read, hint at other things going on, which I don't want to get into too much because I want people to read the book, because I definitely have theories on it, but that just really hooked me too. So Charlie Stickney, awesome Mr. Stickney, hooked us up with the one shot coming out in February for Valentine's Day, which is kind of the hold off period before season 2 of White Ash kicks off in summer 2021, and it's called
a nice little bridge, a stone for us to step on before we dive into the next season.
Yep, and it's called Glarian, and it's about Lillian's mother and Thane's wife, who was an elf queen. And we get to see her in her youth and beauty in Alfheim. And we actually see her first meeting with Thane when he helped save her when she was basically ambushed when he was still a young elf. And she was already this elf goddess queen. And it kind of builds on their relationship. And then it shows them start their mining facilities in White Ash. And also how an ambush by humans that she kind of annihilates kind of leads to her decision to name Lillian. But I really dug it. I thought it was really action-packed. And I got to see a lot more of those fantasy elements I really wanted to see more of. These realms that all these characters are from, which Charlie has told me we're going to get a lot more of in season 2. And to get this little taste was really nice. And I'm really appreciative of Charlie giving us that little chance to, you know, check it out before anyone else. First off, you got to get White Ash. The trade should be coming out in the next couple months. All 6 issues are available now on scout.com. Or you could order them from your local LCS. I believe there's still first prints and second printings. Do you know the print that you're on with White Ash?
That's a good question. Let me give it the old double check. Looks like actually no additional printings. But trade coming soon.
The trade is coming soon, and if you go on, you go to your LCS, you can order the single issues, or just go to scout.com and order them as well.
Yep.
And or you can get them digital, too.
I was going to say, make sure that you pre-order the upcoming Galarian one-shot. That way you get it for sure. You don't got to worry about missing out on it, and you're going to want it if you read this book and you dig it a lot, because, like you were saying, it does provide a lot of the backstory. Paints Thane, I think, in a much different light, which was interesting, kind of to flip how I was feeling about him, but also now makes the ending a little bit wilder. And then, like you said, you get to see Lily's mother, Galarian, the fierce, the Deathbringer. Really,
you definitely want it, being a White Ash fan. And yeah, you really get to see.
And the art was awesome in it too. Just fantastic.
The art was fantastic in that, yeah, in Galarian. And to bring that up, let's give credit where credit is due. Galarian, which, hold on one moment. Galarian is drawn by Romina Morinelli, with art also by Connor Hughes and Finn Cram and Yishan Lee. I believe Romina Morinelli and Yishun Lee do the art when they're still in Alfheim, and then Connor Hughes and Finn Cram come back when they're back in White Ash, which is cool with them switching between the Alfheim realm into back to the realm of Pennsylvania here in White Ash.
It's so dour when they switch to. It makes me like, I hate the real world. Go back.
And we get a lot of compassion for Thane, which I agree with. Thane, as a boy, to just growing up, I really think the death of Glarion that we see in the White Ash season one arc is really what kind of hardened him and made him into the person we know now, because he kind of seems like just a lover and like kind of, you know, a very whimsical person in Glarion, which is nice that we get all this character development.
It really feels like it provides him with a much stronger motivation for the main series. Like, especially knowing that she is lost after seeing this issue, seeing their past together, I almost feel a little bit more about, like, why he would be pushing it so hard. Why would he be doing the things that he's been doing? How did he become this villain, I guess? And it does give him that humanity.
Yeah, and he's still, I think, he has many sides. We'll see where the story goes in season two. And it's perfect for Valentine's Day, Glarion, so definitely pre-order it, because that love story between Glarion and Thane is actually really touching, and kind of the decision to have Lillian. And I just love the character development it builds. And seeing more of those fantasy realms is great, which I can't wait to get more of that. We're really lucky that Charlie's such an awesome dude and sent us that copy. And, I mean, just Scout is on fire right now with the stuff coming out. So many new books coming out. I mean, already the three we talked about today are all great. I'm super excited for Provenance of Madness. I mean, I love me some H.P. Lovecraft storytelling comic-wise, where they get to kind of take a spin on Lovecraft's work. I we all know Lovecraft was not the best man, but he definitely created most horror genres and kind of led the way for Stephen King. And besides his many issues with racism, a lot of his stories were great. And it was just, it's crazy that a writer created so many gods and the Necromonicon and so many different characters that are used now in culture, like Cthulhu and so many others, like Visigoth. It's just, there's just so much density in that, and so much of his stories are about going mad. So I'm really interested in Provenance of Madness. It looks awesome. Also, The Shepherd looks freaking incredible.
It's pretty interesting looking too.
I'm pretty pumped for that, and that David Mack variant looks awesome, which the Scout variants are getting cooler and cooler with each release of a new book. It seems like 2021 is the year they're really going to blow up, which I'm happy about, because they're such a great company and everyone that works there is so friendly and hands-on with the fans like us, especially Charlie, who's just one of the nicest guys ever. Can't say that enough. He's a great dude.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward next year to Sam and his Talking Gun. I think that one's going to be pretty wild.
I agree. That one I am pretty excited for as well. And then just recently, Black Cotton was announced, which looks really awesome too, where it's a world where the racial lines are switched. It's from Brian K. Hawkins, where basically all the police are African-Americans and the whites are the minority. And it's basically a spin on, you know, police brutality, showing, you know, how it would feel if you were on the receiving end of kind of all of the stuff that's happening with Black Lives Matter. That if, humans, I'm a humanist, so I've seen all human lives are worth it, but definitely with police violence against African Americans is a huge problem in America. And I think that'll be a good book to kind of show and hopefully make some people that don't think that's a big deal kind of empathize with the characters And that was just dropped in Diamond, I believe, this week. That's coming out from Scout.
Should be in February as well, yeah.
Once again, now just kind of, we're going to get into some other stuff, but White Ash is great. You should order the trade or read it digital now. It is on the Scout website. Definitely pre-order Glarian. It's going to be the perfect Valentine's Day book for this fantasy world that Charlie's built. And so we did a poll this week. We are in February. I'm about to have a baby. Actually, me and my wife are having our daughter a week from today while we're inducing. Woo. So, woo! Yeah, I've never been more excited for anything in my life. So that's a week from today. So in February, I'm from California originally. I live now in Las Vegas with Chaz. A bunch of my friends from Northern California are going to come down and they're going to kind of celebrate the birth of my daughter, our daughter, Willow. And Jack's coming, our editor who lives in Northern California, the sound engineer maestro that helps us sound good and creates our awesome intros and is reading all these comic books with us, whose family's actually been involved with the comic book business longer than all of us. Grown up knowing some indie comic creators like Jim Mahfood, which is really interesting. And Jack will definitely talk more about that later. Also, Jack loved White Ash, and at the end of this episode, he's going to add his thoughts about it. Unfortunately, he can't record right now because of life and because of his internet being worked on at the moment. Because those dwarves are really trying to not... It's those dwarves in North San Juan that are...
Yeah.
That are trying to stop his knowledge of this book getting out. Because Charlie Stickney, you know, is writing this about, really about the town of North San Juan, the mining town there. And the elves and dwarves are working together to stop Jack from letting out the truth.
They don't want it out.
They don't want it out. They're upset right now. And they're trying to get this whole podcast episode just cut down.
Anyways. But, we did a poll, and in February, when we're all together, we're going to be watching.
Which was what we were starting about.
Two terrible films.
We chose two films each. Jack chose two Neil Breen films: Las Vegas Legend, Neil Breen, Pass Through, and Twisted Pair.
Yep.
Chaz, you chose.
I chose Santa Jaws, and I forget the other one because I. Was terrible.
Velocipaster.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Velocipaster. Man, I saw an image from that one too where they didn't put the visual effects in. So it just said exploding car on the screen instead of an actual car exploding.
Yeah.
So I'm a little glad that we dodged that bullet, but what were the two winners in your two picks?
And the two I chose, which were the winners, was Shark Exorcist and Cats. And it seems to me that a lot of people really want us to watch Cats.
I don't know. They could have been big Shark Exorcist fans, too.
Film Girl Noir, one of our big fans, was talking about that. Her fans are on our page, too. They were talking about their experience watching Cats, and I think that she shared that, and that got a lot of people wanting us to watch Cats, which I hear has no talking. Some really creepy sexual cat stuff. A lot of Jason Derulo. And it's just going to be a crazy double feature with all the weird body writhing that happens in Shark Exorcist.
And then all the weird cat writhing that happens in Cats.
The cat writhing. We're not big drinkers, really. I don't really drink much ever, but we are going to imbibe for this. And we're going to live stream it. With my wife and other family and friends will be here, and all three of us will be together, and we'll do it on Discord, YouTube, and record it so you can get it on all three, you know, all three vibes and channels. Also, our next episode is a book we're so excited to talk about, These Savage Shores. And when we release that episode, we will also be announcing the next miniseries with Chaz Pictures creator.
Indeed.
In doing that, we are also going to cover the White Noise Boys Vault books. And big announcement, we are doing to kick it all off, to kick off the new miniseries, we are going to start with the White Noise book that is incredible. And it's going to have Brian Wickman, writer of Grit, is going to be a special guest host. And so is Graphic Vandalism, Johnny Graphic from Nerds from the Underground. And it is going to be a New Year's Eve coffin-bound, basically spectacle of an episode. We're going to talk about the series as a whole. I think we're all going to have fun because it's going to be for New Year's. And it's going to be great to talk with Brian about this book, which he said he could talk about for hours. I know I can too. And Johnny has a huge amount of love for it also. And Jack is going to just be experiencing it. And I think Chaz is going to be finishing it because he hasn't read it yet. But we're really excited for that New Year's Eve special. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I can't wait for you all to tune in. And any other news we want to talk about that came up this week or anything weird?
Nothing else comes to mind other than how excited I am for that live stream to watch some terrible movies with some good friends. And to do it all with you all at home. Like you were saying, we're going to do it on Discord and YouTube.
Really excited about
all
that
stuff. So
thank you all for voting. A quick thing, shout out to TKO. I got all their new books and I read all of them. They're all great. Alex Pacnadel, one of my favorite writers, wrote my favorite of the bunch, but The Pull was great too by Steve Orlando, which is another writer we love. But Red Fork was just something special, and those shorts were all really great too. And I also got the prose, Blood Like Garnets, haven't read that yet. But TKO was so cool. They sent me a pin and all this stuff because I bought all their new batch of books. They're such a great company, and it's cool that they send all these cool extras.
It's a nice pin too.
That support them.
Yeah, I got a pin and a sticker. But I had a sticker already on my
I got
little
two stickers. One's
Storfolio.
On my water bottle now, and one is on my notes binder.
I gave the other one to my partner so she could put it on her laptop, but I don't think she did yet.
Thank you for taking this trip with us to White Ash, Pennsylvania. Jack will be leaving his thoughts right after you leave us. And as I always say, be good to each other out there. Treat each other with love. We're all in this together. And as Chaz always says,
wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Wear your masks. We're only going to get through this together. And for me, I miss movies. And I want to see Demon Slayer, the Mugen Train drama, in theaters. Oh yeah, big news about that. That just became Japan's highest grossing movie of all time, beating Spirited Away, which held the record for, I believe, 16 years maybe. And the reviews for it are incredible. Me and Chaz, if you've listened on Nerds, are giant Demon Slayer fans. So I can't wait. We're going to end on this note. I can't wait for you all to experience the glorious arc of Kyojuro Rengoku. We are outside the panels. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with These Savage Shores. Wash your hands. Love each other. Be good. And you guys have a great day. And also, please, you can follow us at Outside The with a zero instead of a O on Twitter. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMusic, and SoundCloud. Please write and review and subscribe. Once again, this is us now. Finally, you can also follow me, Poet Air, at PoetAir33 on Twitter. And where can they follow you, Chaz?
You can follow me on pretty much all social media at Chaz Simons. And you can follow our editor and producer, Jack, on Twitter at Sin Aesthetics, with a X, I believe, in the aesthetics. But once you start typing in Sin, you'll see.
And also, I'd suggest you can follow Charlie Stickney at Charles Stickney. He loves his fans. He's a great guy. And now, once again, for our third exit, make this comedic, Jack. In editing, make this funny.
Yeah, get outside, take a deep breath, but do it through the mask.
Go see Demon Slayer, the Mugen Train drama. I love Kyle Jarrow and Goku. Wear a mask, wash your hands. And now here is Jack.
Hey there, this is Synesthetic, a.k.a. Jack Pruitt. What is there to say that hasn't already been said? I really enjoyed these books, and I'm genuinely excited to see where the story goes in upcoming releases. The world building and character development are awesome. You can really tell that Charlie Stickney has a history in writing fantasy novels. I really enjoyed the themes of forbidden love and the commentaries on classism and racism present in the relationships between the dwarves and elves. With compelling action, intricate agendas, evil Norse vampire-like villains, the broods, and the complications of romance in the face of adversity, there's a lot to sink your teeth into. Every issue seems to unravel more and more of a deep and layered story. All in all, it is a much deeper level of complexity and intrigue than I expected to slip into in a 6-issue miniseries. The upcoming one-shot fills in some of the backstory of the main frenemy of our protagonist and the mother of his love interest. It's a fun story that, while isolated from the rest of the overarching story, ties in nicely and will most likely become a point of reference in books to come. White Ash is a must-read. Thanks for listening. As always, this is Outside the Panels.